Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome back to the New Books in Hindu Studies podcast, the podcast channel on New Books Network. I'm your host, Dr. Raj Balkaran, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Xenia Zeiler, who is Associate Professor in South Asian Studies at the University of Helsinki, and who's also the editor of a fascinating new publication, published as part of Routledge's Studies in Religion and Digital Culture in 2020, called Digital Hinduism. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
As am I. Tell us how this project came about. How did you end up studying digital Hinduism?
Oh, well, not surprisingly, that has been a long journey. I've been dealing with research or I've been doing studies and I've been interested in studies about digital religion more broadly. For quite a while now, I think it's more than 10 years already, or about 10 years. Since I've got more and more engaged in this new subfield or subdiscipline of digital religion. And that came about because of a colleague of mine, actually, who made me aware of this, and because of my understanding how influential, how increasingly important this field of religious studies is going to be, not only within the academic disciplines, obviously, but also my interest in and my awareness about how digital media interact with society at large. And yes, that is without a question that we have all these new media genres and formats and spaces, digital spaces being developed, technically developed, being used by people. And yeah, how this whole field of digital religion actually potentially works and how it can be researched. So I got increasingly interested in that. I did some theoretical work, some methodical work along the way. And as my own academic background is actually in classical Indology, and then later on a lot in contemporary Hindu traditions, it's not at all surprising to combine these two aspects. And yeah, that is how my interest came about.
I remember thinking, we actually were part of a Navaratri research group, and we met and had a conference in 2016, I believe it was. And I remember thinking how way ahead of the curve you were studying this stuff even then. Our 2018 publication, Nine Nights of the Goddess, you had a really interesting contribution about digital Hinduism as it pertains to the worship of Durga. And while it was way ahead of the curve then, I'm like, now it's thank goodness someone's doing this work. Because so much has happened in the field, and you mentioned there's fascinating publications on digital Judaism, digital Buddhism, and it's high time for this publication. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how the book is organized, what the different parts pertain to?
Very, very gladly, of course. Yeah. So the idea for the book came about when really I started to understand that more and more, especially young scholars, some of them, I wasn't even aware of their work, so that a lot of people around the world, maybe not a lot, but increasingly researchers around the world in all kind of regions, obviously in India, a lot in the US, some in Europe. So these researchers looked into this interaction of digital media and Hindu traditions. And I also was at a certain point painfully aware that there was no kind of reference work or no kind of space, except a very few bibliographies which have been compiled by colleagues. But other than that, there was no secure way of looking up this kind of research. And we thought it's timely, I thought, and some colleagues thought, for instance, the editors of the series, of the Rutledge series on digital religion. So we thought it would be really about time to have a volume on this theme, of this emergent theme, digital Hinduism. And I tried to find as many colleagues as possible to cover a wide range of the current research done. So in contrast to this kind of more scattered articles and book chapters, which we, of course, we had before this volume. Fortunately, we had previous studies. There has been some interest in digital Hinduism before this. But still, yes, we wanted to have a more organized approach and volume. That was the basic idea. And then chapters came in, and I decided to arrange the list of content and the structure of this book in a way which highlights certain spaces of negotiations about how digital Hinduism practices and forms may look like. So the first part, for instance, is called Who Belongs? Identity and Finding One's Place. And this part speaks specifically about identity issues related to digital Hinduism. And then we have another part which focuses on authority negotiations, who defines authority and appropriation. And we do have a third part on especially negotiations and debates, which is called Who Debates? Contest and Negotiation. And obviously the chapters in each of these parts also speak about some of the key themes of the other parts. So you can't discuss religious authority without also talking about religious identity very often. So obviously there is an overlap, but yeah. So I tried to find a structure which depicts what are the main key approaches one could take when studying digital Hinduism.
Senior, perhaps a naive question, but a useful one. What is digital Hinduism? Surely it's more than religiosity through an online medium, but say more about that. What does it encompass?
Well, yeah, that was one of the key questions which was posed when the subfield of digital religion overall emerged. So since then, scholars discussed what is digital religion. In my case, yes, what is digital Hinduism? So it's very important, I think, and that is not only my personal opinion, but a lot of colleagues share that by today, that digital religion, and again, in our case, digital Hinduism, it does not only refer to religion as performed or articulated online, but it also speaks about more broadly how the digital religion, how religion as negotiated, constructed in and with the means of digital media, how that interacts with society at large and with religious practice in particular. So this is my approach to digital Hinduism, it's more, definitely, it's more than just Hindu practices and Hindu beliefs negotiated in media.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
There is a plethora, there's a wide range of studies in the book, I believe 12, 13, something like that. Do you want to say a bit about some of the studies?
Yes, of course. While I encourage everyone to look at the list of content, everyone who is interested in this new development, certainly, I'm sure, finds some articles, some book chapters of interest for them. And yeah, it was in the nature of digital religion that we have a broad range of themes, but also we have a broad range of methods and theories which are applied in the individual book chapters and case studies. So by definition, this is a multidisciplinary, multi-methodical volume, which brings together different ways of looking at how this interrelation of Hinduism and online spaces and digital spaces happens. We have, for instance, case studies which deal with different regional and geographical settings. So we have case studies from India, but we also have a few case studies from diasporic backgrounds. We have something on Hindu traditions in the US. We also have some one chapter on Hindu traditions in Singapore. So we try to span that range. But then also, yes, we have case studies which focus on different media formats. So we have studies on Facebook, on social media broadly. We have for the first time ever a chapter which uses examples from Twitter. We have for the first time ever, to the best of my knowledge, a chapter which specifically deals with constructions of beliefs and negotiations of practices on WhatsApp. So these new social media, which are increasingly used by a lot of people, they play a role. We also have more traditional, if I would traditional media genres like websites, the internet broadly. We have a variety of all these.
And there's even an article on Instagram, Durga Puja on Instagram.
Yes, that's the one which uses Twitter as well. That's Deepa Sundaram, who speaks about Durga Puja, by the way. We have been talking about Durga Puja before, Durga Puja on Instagram and Twitter.
I was going to ask you after our discussion of the book, but this may be the perfect time. Speaking of digital developments of Durga Puja, I believe you were just instrumental in creating a Durga video game. Do you want to say a quick note about that? I think we'll also link the URL for the game in your podcast description as well. Tell us a little
yes,
bit about that.
Please do. We came up with a new video game, and I always used to call it the first ever educational video game for South Asian studies, to the best of my knowledge. But I think by now it is quite certain that it is indeed the first ever educational video game. That's what it is. It's called the Durga Puja Mystery. And it was developed specifically for teaching and learning about South Asian culture broadly, and specifically about Durga Puja. That is the content example of this game. The Durga Puja Mystery is an open access game that was very important to me. It is free to download. I invite everyone to play it. Some colleagues have been using it in their teaching already, and I have been using it for the first time just a few months ago in my teaching, and I got student feedback, which was great. So I came up with this idea to basically extend the benefits of educational video games to my own discipline, South Asian studies. And I wanted to develop something which is fun, but also educational. And that's the definition of video games. I've been working specifically on video games and their interaction with religion for quite a while. So it makes perfect sense to try this out. I initiated a collaboration with a game development studio in Kolkata with Flying Robots. And yeah, together we came up with this game, which has a quite intensive website with a lot of information, not only on the game and on the technicalities and on the content of the game, but also on Durga Puja more broadly. So I took care to really have this website, which also is fed with new information as we go on. It has several talks by colleagues. It has a documentation by a colleague. It has an academic blog post and so on. So there is a lot of content information which hopefully support the players when they play the game, the Durga Puja Mystery.
You may qualify quite possibly for the coolest career in South Asian studies that we know of.
My day, it is flattering. Thank you.
Definitely the most hip Indologist. In my view, you're way ahead of the curve. I've realized over the last couple of years, I probably am as well in different ways in terms of online medium, digital education, etc. How do you see this work? Clearly, this work was conceived and executed without foreknowledge of the events of 2020 on the planet. But how do you see work such as this, or this work in particular, playing a part in the transformation afoot with online education at the Academy?
Oh, yes. I mean, the things that you do with your podcast, for instance, as you just mentioned, the things which I do, like with the educational video game, the things that a lot of colleagues do, for instance, in creating their own teaching documentaries, and many, many, many more examples we could bring for that. So all these developments, which make increasing use of the ever diversifying range of tech tools which we have today. First and foremost, I think it's a thing which is super welcomed by students. So that certainly is a feedback that I get, and I know it from colleagues as well. Students do appreciate some diversity in how they are taught. So this traditional lecturing might not be so appreciated by many students any longer. It's more about offering diverse paths or ways to gain knowledge, to possibly also have some fun factor sometimes. And as you say, this is certainly accelerated by the pandemic. We had great initiatives with exchanging guests, online guest lectures, And it's fantastic for students all over the world to have experts, like the real experts in certain subfields, to suddenly be in their classes. This is amazing. I got super, super feedback from students about all these possibilities which can be increasingly used. The other thing is, of course, it's not only about a new quantity of opportunities and chances and, yeah, this technical diversity I was mentioning, but certainly also it is about a change in ways of thinking about education. It's also about quality. It is not only about, yeah, offering this broad range, but also about being increasingly aware and testing the possibilities that some of these new tech developments might offer. When we speak about video games, educational video games, as a small example, it is very often discussed that indeed this kind of immersion factor or the emotional factors which are enhanced at least by playing a video game for many players, that they do have a very specific impact on the learning curve in certain ways. So this has to be also in the future more researched. But yeah, there is an increasing awareness about this, and that's good.
What's really funny, when I first went down the road of online teaching, probably 2016 or so, I'll be very forthcoming. I was really prejudiced against it. I really felt that face-to-face, in-person transmission is the sort of the gold standard of education. Now, I'm not only a convert, I'm proselytizing, but it's interesting that online education, being an online educator, has helped me to become a better educator, period, such that the multimedia dimension you can even transport to face-to-face teaching whenever we start that up again. So it really resonates what you say about students needing, wanting, benefiting from learning through various media in a fun way. That's also been my experience. I had contract teaching undergrads last semester at the University of Calgary, and they learned a great deal from videos, from podcasts, and for them the learning was somehow less onerous, right? They were able to fit it into their life in a less onerous way. So that really resonates. I'll have I know that we're a bit constrained for time today, so I'll have maybe one last question I'll ask you. Clearly, you're much more familiar with digital Hinduism coming into this project than most, or just about anyone. And nevertheless, there's such a plethora of data in this volume. Editing it, like, sort of, what struck you, or what surprised you, or what sort of, you know, what was impressed upon you having curated this volume?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we spoke about the plurality of methods and theories and approaches applied. But yeah, also, of course, this goes for the data, for the case study gathered and analyzed, for the data which were analyzed and gathered in the case studies and presented and discussed. Yes, there is a vast array of data which we have. And I think the most surprising thing is that certain media genres, which might not be perceived by some, at least still even today, as being very important for religious actors, actually are so easily and with the uttermost, yes, ease, and they are used at an everyday level by so many religious actors. So that became very clear, that things like WhatsApp and even Instagram, they have so many followers and people who use them. It's not only the more traditional ways of using digital tools. It's not only the internet any longer. And there are new things and new ideas and new approaches to the to using these digital media all the time. So very likely, given the quick developments today, this volume will have material which will be which we might need to put into an archive quite quickly, because all the time things come up and we'll have new super interesting studies about platforms, about ways they are used. It changes a lot and it changes all the time. This is maybe the most important finding, though also on the other hand, it's quite obvious.
That's fascinating. Maybe just say one quick word to close about what you're working on now. What's the next main project for you?
Oh, yeah. I'm certainly continuing in this ever-expanding field of digital Hinduism. I do continuous theoretical work on especially video games and gaming. But also I'll continue with the education of video games. In fact, we are currently in the process of developing a second educational video game, which is related to the first, but also it's entirely new and it stands in its own right. It's a video game about Durga Puja celebrations in diasporic settings. And that is because Durga Puja as a festival has traveled all around the globe today. We have Durga Puja celebrations brought to, I think, all over the world by Indian migrant communities. And yes, it is a very, very important space for not only celebrating as such, but also for negotiations of authority, identity very often. And yeah, we try to capture this a little bit in the new educational video game. So that's one thing. The other thing is that also I continue a little bit with my work on tantric traditions, which I've been doing since 15 years. We are discussing the possibilities of creating something on digital yoga currently. So there are all kinds of projects simmering.
All very fascinating. I want to thank you for appearing on the podcast today. It was great hearing about your work.
It was fantastic that you had me. Thank you so much for your interesting questions. Thank you for this possibility. And yes, please do continue with the podcast. It's a fantastic opportunity.
My pleasure. It's lots of fun for me as well. So for those of you listening, we have been speaking with Dr. Tinia Zeiler, who's Associate Professor in South Asian Studies at the University of Helsinki. We've been speaking to her about Digital Hinduism, 2020 Rutledge. Until next time, stay safe, stay sane, keep reading, keep listening, and keep contemplating and engaging digital Hinduism. Take care.